You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thursday, everyone, and welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. On today's show, the second of two consecutive off days for the Rockets, who are now in Brooklyn getting ready for tomorrow night's game, kicking off a five-game road trip. I'm joined by Hunter Atkins, Rockets reporter, well, not just Rockets reporter, but Houston Chronicle reporter for a lot of sports, including the NBA and the Houston Rockets. Wrote a great column for HoustonChronicle.com following Tuesday night's game, the 104-85 loss to Portland. Hunter, welcome to Locked On Rockets. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. This is long overdue because you very kindly have done other podcasts with me, as well as guided me through many, many dumb questions I've asked you personally off air.
Well, I appreciate that. And now, finally, I get to be the one asking you a little bit, because I know you spent a lot of time Tuesday digging around at Toyota Center, talking to people, and your story at HoustonChronicle.com. It's also on your Twitter feed at HunterAtkins35 and mine at Ben Dubose. Rockets struggling to find answers to a 1-5 start. And of course, you talked to a number of players, people around the team, and so on and so forth. But generally speaking, the reason it resonated with me is that to me, when you see a team that comes off 65 wins and a Western Conference Finals appearance, and suddenly they start 1-5 and are blown out in an 0-4 stretch at home, it's less about talent. It's less about X's and O's, and the story is more, how are they this lost? What has happened? So there's some really good insight in this story that I want to get to. And, you know, what really resonated with me was the sort of head-shaking dynamic that you could sense in the locker room. I'm going to read you a couple of lines from your story. "These Rockets look and sound as defeated as their records suggest. Man, we need to see what it feels like to win," Paul said. And then earlier, a great line from you that I enjoyed, "they inextricably are tethered to the standards set last season." So to me, Hunter, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost feels like that 65-17 mark being a hamstring away from beating the Warriors, in a way, it almost sort of makes things worse, does it not? Because, you know, you're struggling, and yet now you seem to have this sense in which they're kind of in their own heads, trying to somehow, those seven returning members from a year ago, recapture the magic, and yet they're not even close to that at the moment.
Perfectly said, man. I appreciate it. You know, see, I wrote that they are inextricably tethered to that, you know, the record-setting number of wins from last year, because we are viewing them that way right now. They, of course, viewed themselves that way coming into this season. You know, talking over any of our questions about, like, you know, can they get past losing Ariza and Bambute, replacing them with a collection of Ennis and, you know, a bunch of guys that can't defend. And they're like, yeah, we could do it. We could do it. We could do it. We're going to do it. Didn't you see how, you know, we almost won it last year, et cetera, et cetera. But now that, you know, we keep bringing that up, you know, as members of the media slash, they understand that is the perception of them from the world, right? That they were so close, they expect to be right back in the picture. So it's an inescapable, you know, crutch at this point. And, it, you know, P.J. Tucker, who obviously everybody loves for his candor, you know, he said, "I hate talking about last season. It's gone," which is a really, I thought, kind of powerful way to put it,
yeah.
Right? Just how bothered they are by the comparisons. But at the same time, you know, like, they keep referencing last year also as a reason why they can overcome some of these things. You know, they really haven't put last season behind them. They just hate being reminded that right now they suck so much.
Yeah, I mean, I like being that blunt because it's completely fair and honest. They've been outplayed 0-4 at home, and they haven't even been competitive in those. It's just stunning to see them look the way they do right now. And I suppose the case for optimism, sometimes I think when you're in this dynamic, it's easier to find yourself on the road than it is at home, because the vibe is just so weird. I like the scene that you put of Daryl Morey, Tad Brown, and Tillman Fertitta, obviously GM, CEO, owner, sitting together towards the end of the game. Morey not in his usual in-game hiding spot, but really all the big guns together, and Tad Brown looking over his shoulder at a family member seated several rows back, effectively just sharing these knowing glances. And in some respects, I almost feel like when you're at home, it makes it worse because that tension is just palpable, is it not?
Yeah, I wouldn't make too big of a deal, though, about, you mentioned optimism, right? Like that they can get away from some of the eyeballs, some of the pressure at home. I really don't think that's factoring in that much. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because these blowout losses that they've had are not because they have more pressure at home. It's just like totally fundamental, fractured dynamic. And I don't necessarily mean in terms of off-court chemistry, but just on-court chemistry.
Right.
They're terrible right now. And, you know, it was brought up to Chris Paul after the game. You know, well, maybe if you guys go on the road, you can get your mojo back. And Chris, who sometimes is really, really funny with mm-hmm. how honest he is, he goes, hell, we ain't that much better on the road. We only got one win.
Wow.
So, they're very upfront about how terrible they are right now. You know, they're really not talking their way around it. They're also not suggesting that the road would be a reason why. They're going much more to the general sense of we have time, which actually that's a much better topic for us to talk about. This notion that do they in fact have time to, quote, find it, to, quote, figure it out? These are things that they've said. And in one respect, of course they do. None of us are expecting this roster to look this way in another 40 games, right?
Yeah.
So, like, the reason why in my story today, I buried it a little bit, but I really focused on this, I thought it was rather rare scene where they're getting blown out and Daryl Morey, who is like, typically very tortured during games,
right,
even if they're winning, he knows that mathematically they're getting their butts kicked at this point. So he comes out, he sits down at midcourt with Tillman Fertitta and Tad Brown. Presumably Tillman, you know, texted him and asked him to come join him at his courtside seats. And I'm watching them watch the game, and then my thought is, okay, they can't stand for this anymore, and they know the shortcomings of this roster are just so apparent that they're not going to overcome it, even when James Harden and James Ennis come back, that they're watching guys like Carmelo, Michael Carter-Williams, and much more ghastly to them, Eric Gordon and Clint Capella, who are having really bad seasons so far, and they're just thinking, we have to change something. We need more. It's why, you know, we're all talking about, can they pull off a Jimmy Butler trade, right? Mm-hmm. It's why it came out, I don't think by the Rockets' volition, but I think somebody around the league leaked to, you know, to Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports that
ESPN
Daryl has re-amplified his efforts to go get Jimmy Butler. You know, when you talk about like pushing the panic button, quote unquote, oh, like without question, Daryl Morey is hitting that thing right now, trying to find a way to just get more bodies, more, you know, players that can defend better, can give more effort, can work better with some of the established core that they have. So, you know, yeah, they have enough time to like be a successful team. But big picture, winning the West, getting to the Western semis, I kind of think it's so crazy to say because it's only been six games, but they don't have much time left, I think, to be able to make up ground. I really don't. You know, like, if you're going to be able to win, let's say you have to win at least 58 games to be near the top. I mean, that's a pretty general, like, generous ballpark picture, mm-hmm. don't you think?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you probably need more, but let's say, like, 58 wins. Well, damn, dude. Now they're going to have to win, right, 57 out of their next 76 games. Like, that, like that's pretty – the math just – it just gets really realistically difficult at that point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, and it's worth noting these anyway. Six games, which you've lost five of, they've all come against the Western Conference and all against potential Western Conference playoff teams. So in terms of tiebreakers, in terms of boosting the records of other teams in the West, it's not like you've just been losing to, you know, teams in the East that are inconsequential. You know, as far
right.
as losses goes, these are not good.
Right, and there was a great – so Tim McMahon of ESPN – asked, he was like just barely beginning a conversation, a question to Mike D'Antoni after the game about, I think, saying something about, you know, do you think you still have time, or is there enough time, or do you have some time to? And Mike D'Antoni, I mean, he's the best, right? He really is the best, especially when he's upset and mad about a loss, because he has that, like, half-joking, oozing with sarcasm, self-deprecating response to everything. So he interrupts Tim. He says, maybe in the East you have time, not in the West, which was a great line. And but he might have been overreacting a touch after a bad loss, but it is what we all are thinking, right?
Yep.
It's that there's such a small margin for error. If your goal is to win the West or be in the top one or two, you have such a small margin for error in terms of how many games you can lose, or rather how long it might take for you to become the best version of yourself as a team. And they're feeling that. You know, if anybody out there thinks that right now the Rockets still are not measuring themselves against the Warriors, they are, I mean, if you're somebody out there who thinks that, you have not paid attention. You don't know how this team operates. This is all Daryl Morey thinks about. As crazy as that sounds, because they played so badly, he frames all of it as, can we beat the Warriors? And obviously, nothing about this team suggests they could even win a quarter against the Warriors, right? And he sees that. He knows that. It's why I'm sure all he is doing right now is trying to find a way to upgrade the roster. They have a lot of flexibility too, which we're gonna see play out.
Let me ask you, what is the bigger storyline? You referred to it in your tweet yesterday morning, and then in your story about the veteran minimum contracts. I know you're referring to the guys who have largely disappointed, certainly Michael Carter-Williams, largely Carmelo Anthony, James Ennis, who it's too early to say anything particularly negative about Ennis because, quite frankly, he hasn't been out there, but what limited time we have seen, he's been far too foul-prone. He's not been the Ariza replacement that he was hyped up to be in the offseason and early in training camp. But which is the bigger story? Is it that? Because I think even though they're disappointing, you can move those minimum contracts, as you referenced in the tweet, or is it the Gordon and Capella regressions? Because to me, that's what's most alarming, is you have these guys last
definitely
year.
No, I'm just going to interrupt just to, so you can just keep going with that point. No, that is it. Because they can't fix that.
Yep.
Like, keep going with whatever you were going to say about harping on Gordon and
yeah,
Capella.
Well,
but
no.
That's the biggest
just
problem.
The supporting evidence, because, look, I mean, the story, look, the Warriors have at least four All-Star level players, maybe five with DeMarcus Cousins, depending on what shape he is in when he finally starts playing. A year ago, it was thought the Rockets had just Harden and Paul. Well, the difference is you had Eric Gordon take a step into probably being a top 50 player in the league, fringe All-Star at times, and Clint Capella into a guy that I would argue was top 30, and many people around the league thought would get the max this summer, if not for the whole restricted free agency thing holding down his value. And Eric Gordon this year, there's no other way to say it, he's been dreadful. He's been terrible. He's shooting 30% from the field, 23% from
three. He has the lowest shooting percentage right now of anyone on the team.
It's hilarious.
It's astonishing.
23. His player efficiency rating is 6.7. I mean, that's just unreal. And then, you know,
so
Capella, I would say Tuesday was a slight step in the right direction, you know, superficially, 14-14, three blocks against Nurkic is a good stat line.
No, he played well. We were there. He played. He
yeah,
played
but
really,
he's still
really stupendously well.
He's still not the guy he was, and maybe some of it's, you know, the fact he had the injuries in the preseason. He's still not picking up guys on the perimeter on switches as well as he did a year ago. So he's getting better, and I think a lot of it may be physical with him, but he's still not where he was a year ago defensively, and that's part of how they were so good defensively. It wasn't just the Ariza and Bamute, it's that you had Capella to cover up a lot of the other issues, and now, you know, you don't have Ariza and Bamute. You flip them for these minimum guys that we've talked about, but you also, you know, while it's not necessarily Capella's fault, he's also not as much of a solution, a cure-all, as he was a year ago. And so I think that ties into the general theme, which is it's the regression from certainly Gordon, but to a lesser extent Capella as well. That's kind of the theme that's kind of overshadowing all of this. And I guess you could argue Chris Paul too, but, you know, I think some of the Chris Paul takes, you know, after two bad games coming off the suspension, I think those are largely premature. But the Gordon and Capella to me is the biggest storyline.
Without question. You know, and we could even parse that topic out in two different ways. So in one respect, let's just ask the general question to each other, to whoever's listening, do you think Gordon, Paul, Capella will turn it around and that they will have excellent seasons, either as excellent or close to the ones that they had last year. I feel pretty certain that they will, actually.
I
think they're fine. Chris Paul, he's going to get hurt at some point, but whatever. Like, he's still going to be good. I think Clint Capella is going to be fine. I wouldn't worry about, you know, his slowness to close out or fouling or whatever on defense, because his defense is going to be strengthened once they have their full strength lineups back, right?
Yes. Like,
we can't be too hard on an individual defender that we know is a good individual defender.
True.
Because he's going to get dragged down when he doesn't have the best guys around him and he's going to get elevated when he does. So he'll be fine. For Gordon, I think of those three. I mean, he's the one you have to freak out about the most. It's a really, really bad slump. He's in a really long slump.
Yep.
I didn't have the time to look if he's had a comparable six games, like the one he's had, like the stretch he's had to start this year. But you really have to cross your fingers, because it's, unless there's some mechanical adjustment that a shooting coach can look at and say, or maybe he's hurt and we don't know it. But if you don't have something you can pinpoint to improve, like the idea that this guy can just go into the gym and put up more shots, like there's something more fundamentally wrong at the moment.
Yeah, and
if you don't identify that, that's going to be bad. So I was just going to say, like, that's one part of that discussion. Do we think they're going to turn it around?
Yeah.
Then there's the other part, which is, well, what kind of like options does the team have, right? And I alluded to it before as, you know, if Gordon and Capella are bad or if Paul is bad, there's nothing you could do about that. You know what I mean? Like that, they just become, you know, an anchor at that point, much like Ryan Anderson last year. Because you can't move them. You're not going to move them. And what can a coach do? It's not like a coach can take Eric Gordon and Paul, who are these veterans, and like really just like revamp their skills at some point in the year. It doesn't happen. So if you're Daryl Morey, well, hell, you're stuck with those guys. There's nothing he can do about that. There's nothing Tillman Fertitta can do about that. And that's why it is the bigger storyline. You know, that's the biggest thing, is they have to have those guys play well. They don't have a choice. As for the rest of the players, you know, Melo and Michael Carter Williams, you can flip those guys when you have to. It's okay. Hell, you could even cut them if you wanted to.
Sure.
And, you know, if they're lost causes, it's just not that big of a deal.
So to clarify on Gordon, he has been streaky in Houston, especially last year. I don't know if it was ever this bad, but I'm pretty confident you could find a 5 or 6 game stretch that was really dreadful. The thing that I worry about is that it happening at the start of the season, because that presents an entirely different layer to it. It's kind of like, you know, the team last year, they started 25-4, and then they lost 5 straight games in December. So really, that stretch isn't too different than what they're going through right now. And there were injuries back then. Well, guess what? There's injuries and suspensions now. The problem is that, you know, when that happened a year ago, they had that 25-4 start to fall back on collectively, to where there's no sense of panic. When you start the season that way, you don't really have that anchor, so to speak, to where you feel that great about your foundation. I think one of your quotes from one of the Rockets, I think it was Gordon, actually, saying they're still trying to find themselves and find what they are. And so to me, that's the concerning thing. You know, it's not so much that he can't snap out of it. It's just, you know, it does take a certain mental strength to get through this when you start off the season playing that way, you know?
Well, yeah, but now, you know, we're going full circle with how we started this conversation, which is this team doesn't know who it is right now, and it is, you know, fighting itself to compare this season to last season, right? There's like, it's a crutch to compare itself with last season. So if we're going to, you know, it's like there's a catch-22 to it. We can't keep referencing last year while simultaneously they are saying out loud, and two players have said it, Tucker and Gordon. Gordon's exact words, I hope my memory serves me right, is, this is a different team than last year. Like, that's how, and they are slowly realizing that in the most negative sense, right? What's that really saying? That's really saying, well, we don't have any of the magic and chemistry we had last year so far. And I think it also more subtly is a reference to, like, the downgrade on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are never going to say that out loud, and neither is Daryl Morey or Mike D'Antoni. Like, I even asked Mike D'Antoni as the last question after that game, what will it take to give a harder look at the roster? And he said, no, we got enough guys. But we, you and I know that's not the truth. Like, they don't feel that way. It's why they're hunting for more talent right now. And anybody who's watched knows that. So, you know, you want to say, oh, gosh, you know, this can be overcome with a win streak. Gerald Green even said, like, a 20-game win streak, you know, we're back in it, da-da-da-da-da, as if that's normal. As if just because they did that last season, it means they could do that this season? Uh-uh. The whole point is that they're not the same. They're not as, they're not nearly so good. So, I don't think it's going to be a dramatic swing at this point, you know, to go back to this notion of, do they have enough time to figure it out? Yeah. And I think that they're going to change their goals as well. That's what we're going to see. We saw this with the Warriors last year, right? We saw it with the Cavaliers as well, that you can't, these teams that do have the talent, so long as they can kind of figure it out at the most important stretch for a short period of time in the season, once everybody goes back to zero in the playoffs, the really, really good teams do not care about seeding at all. Like, it's just not something they care about, for real, right? So even Chris Paul brought it up. I think I asked him after the game, you know, essentially, how, you know, are you thinking about the Warriors, right? Like, how can you not at some point be thinking about the bigger picture of the West? And he brought up, he says, we won 65 games last year, but we didn't win at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was he suggesting there? The whole point he's suggesting is they know what they internally, they have enough confidence that if they just have to push through the playoffs, they can run the table. Like, that was essentially what he was saying, that look how good we were last year and we didn't win at all. So meaning season wins are not going to predict if this team can beat the Warriors, if this team can win a championship. So they don't really care about the regular season anymore. I really think that, especially with how badly they're playing, they're just not going to have a choice but to deflect a lot of the attention off of, are you guys still looking for a one seed? Are you guys still trying to get a, you know, a home court advantage? I think they just see it as, like, once we figure it out, no matter how long it takes, then we're money. Like, we're good. We can go to war. And obviously they have enough time for that.
I think further to that point, what they did in the playoffs last year against Golden State, I think if they find themselves to some degree, even if the record doesn't mirror what they had a year ago, I don't think home court advantage is as psychologically significant, because I feel like if they get going again, there's a certain degree of confidence. They don't have that swagger now, but I think there's a certain degree of confidence that they can go into Oakland and compete. Whereas last year, I do think it was slightly more important to have that Game 5, that Game 7 at Toyota Center, only because we hadn't really seen the Chris Paul and James Harden-led Rockets go toe-to-toe with the Warriors. So as far as seeding goes, I do think that while they need a better roster, I do think that if they get that better roster, then especially the leadership of the team, the guys we've been talking about, Chris Paul, James Harden when he gets back, hopefully Capella and Gordon become those guys again, there's less of a sense of questioning, can we do this after what they did in the playoffs last year? I do think that mentally they're a little bit stronger, and of course that's kind of ironic because right now they're not mentally strong at all, given what's going on.
I was going to say, I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of a moot kind of
right. I'm just saying that if
they're so far from that,
right. They're very far from that. I'm just saying that if they get this thing going again, I think that's why you could see the Rockets spin their expectations to where they act as if, well, the number one seed isn't that important anymore. We're just trying to put the best version of ourselves together in April, which is something we've heard Gerald Morey reference several times. April 15th. And Hunter, the last thing I want to get to, the last point, and you know, we've kind of buried the lead a little bit, but your tweet yesterday morning, we've talked about the potential for roster changes, and you know, you cited that last night D'Antoni said no need to change the roster, but behind the scenes, decision makers crave Butler and are ready to move veteran minimum contracts, which I'm assuming are guys like MCW, Carmelo Anthony, those types of things. Do they need a Jimmy Butler type move at this point to find themselves again? Because the thing I keep questioning to myself, Hunter, it feels like that's gone from something that's a bonus to something that may be a necessity.
Necessary. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, they have to get him. Oh, yeah. I mean, if the standard is, if the paradigm is, can we beat the Warriors? Of course, you don't have a choice. You have to go get him. The problem is that they're definitely not going to anytime soon. You know, whether it's a combination of, it would help to get Brandon Knight back and healthy so you could move him. I can't remember. You'll know this more than I do. But when you when you sign a free agent, like, maybe it's not true for the minimum contracts, but when you sign a free agent, you usually have to wait till December 1st.
December 15th.
Right?
December 15th, and that's the case even with minimum guys, yeah.
So, yeah, oh well. So we're not going to see them get Butler until after the 15th, I don't think. I mean, I understand why, like, it makes sense why Daryl, again, this is, I actually don't have this information confirmed, but we're just going with it because the great Adrian Wojnarowski reported it, right? That if Daryl upped his offer to 4 draft picks, well,
with Eric Gordon.
It's because he can't, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said with Eric Gordon.
Oh, really? Was that in the deal?
Well, no. The idea is that if you gave up the 4 draft picks plus Eric Gordon, that's
the
what...
The salaries, would I say.
Well, if you gave up Eric Gordon and the 4 picks, according to Wojnarowski, that would be enough to get a deal. The thing is, from all the reporting, it's that the Rockets don't want to give Gordon plus the 4 picks. They'd rather give Knight plus the 4 picks. If they're giving Gordon, they wouldn't give 4 picks. Because the problem with giving 4 picks, beyond the fact, you know, because you can argue and you can say, yeah, these guys in the 20s are probably not going to be very good. The problem with giving the 4 picks, it's not just the picks that you give up. It's the fact that because of the rule that you can't trade consecutive picks moving forward, then whatever picks you save, i.e. your 2020, 2022, 2024, they would be completely off limits. So you would be completely boxed in. And Hunter, you know as well as I do, if you want to make a trade at the deadline, future first-round picks are the most valuable currency in the NBA.
They already are boxed in.
Well,
that's
the
thing.
Yeah.
That was the point I was trying to make on Twitter, was that, how do I put this? You can't think of we looking at this from the outside, we can't think of it as what would we do. No, you think of it as what does Daryl Morey want to do? What does Daryl Tillman and Tad, what do they want to do? What would they do? And they're not like these draft picks. I'm sorry, they only exist to be traded right now. That's all it is, because they are locked in to a situation where they're going to be playing and relying on Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella, well, I guess Eric Gordon right now, for seasons to come, right? Like, this is the team, and it's not a young team, and they can't just have, like, they can't just really, like, kind of blindly hope that a late 20-something pick is going to inject new life. You're saddled with this, and the window of opportunity to win with this group, basically, I'm being ruthless about this, but barring of a complete out of nowhere surprising talent that's really affordable that would somehow emerge, I mean, really, it would be a miracle, whether it's from the draft or some international signing. But barring that, your window to win is, I'm sorry, it's this season. Like, it just is.
Really?
You know?
Yeah. As soon as you sign Chris Paul to that one, you know, he's getting paid $40 million a year for the next 4 years at 33 years old and older.
Yep.
As soon as you sign that deal.
This is it.
Yeah.
And thus, all the chips are being pushed in so you could add Butler into the mix. Like, a team next year, in theory, or the year after that, that is the roster they have now, I mean, it's going to be, forget it. They're just too old and too everything. But if you do throw in Jimmy Butler, and it's going to be another mega contract, because there's going to be this implicit, you know, like tampering be damned, there's going to be an implicit off-the-books agreement, I'm sure.
Sure.
Just like with Chris Paul, that Butler agrees to sign for 5 years, right? Or
4 years.
Or something like that. Yeah. 4 years. 4 years or whatever. And, that is a team that also, I think, it's a realistic situation that I think, whether it's Daryl or Mike D'Antoni also, they can pitch that to Tillman and be like, listen, do you really care about this team winning a championship or not? This is the move we have to make. You're going to pay the luxury tax. It's fine. Hell, we could figure it out in another 3 or 4 years how to get that money back. Like, don't worry about it. You just have to You have to make good on the talent window you have. And it's very, very, very narrow right now for them. I really think it's basically this season, maybe next year. And obviously it sucks for them that they're doing it at the same time that the Warriors have that window. So, you know, they're going to have to wait till probably after December 15th to try to do a Butler deal. What's working in their favor is that it doesn't look like Miami has put together a much better package. They're the other team that's rumored, or I shouldn't say rumored, speculated to be trying to work out a deal. The Rockets also would be dealing from such an awful position of leverage right now, right? Because
sure.
Everybody knows how desperate they are. that's actually why it's very unlikely that a Rockets source is the one that leaked to Woj, or to whomever, that Daryl upped his offer to 4 draft picks. Because, if we sensed that the team was desperate before, but now we know they're desperate. So if you're, whether it's Tom Thibodeau or whoever else is behind the scenes there making decisions in Minnesota, what's in it for you to, be easy on the Rockets in any deal? You know, you think the Rockets are hesitant to give up Gordon. Shoot, if I'm the Wolves, I'm asking for Capella. Just do it, right? Mm. And obviously the Rockets will say no, and then they hang up the phone. But it's, the Rockets actually, it sounds so crazy, they have to play really well before they can gain any leverage back. It's all related.
Yep, fair point. Folks, he's Hunter Atkins. You can follow him on Twitter at HunterAtkins35. You can read his work on the Rockets and other teams across this great city at HoustonChronicle.com. And if you're still a print subscriber, of course, and the print Houston Chronicle newspaper, imagine that. Hunter, thanks so much. Thanks so much for the time. Anything else you want to plug that I haven't already?
No, I want to give props to you. I think you've been a really great, fun voice for Houston sports, and I'm grateful that you had me on. It was long overdue. I would love to come back anytime.
Absolutely, we'll do it again in a couple of weeks. Because I thought this was great. So we'll put you in the regular rotation. Okay.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Talk to you and whoever else is listening out there. Thanks to you too.
Awesome. Well, Hunter, I'll catch up with you soon. I know there's not another Rockets game at home for a couple of weeks. We're starting the 5-game road trip, but I guess I'll see you mid-November when they get back home.
You can find me there or on Tinder, Bumble, any dating app. You can find me pretty easily, I promise.
There you go. Thanks, Hunter. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right, bye.
He's Hunter Atkins, again, HunterAtkins35 on Twitter. And I think a lot of good discussion. The one thing I would push back a little bit, they don't necessarily have to, from a salary perspective, add any of the minimum guys to get a trade done for Jimmy Butler, but conceivably, while I don't know that Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony have that much value, I guess James Ennis could. So that could be one piece that maybe if the Timberwolves want, well, the Rockets would not be able to move him until December 15th. So there could be some validity to that. It's just they don't necessarily have to move those guys from a math perspective. In fact, if you need the roster spot, you could cut those guys at any moment, as we discussed earlier. So unless they want James Ennis, I don't know if that's truly a prerequisite for Jimmy Butler, but generally speaking, I agree with Hunter's assessment that right now the Rockets are not in a good leverage standpoint at all to make this deal, and quite frankly, I'm pretty sure that Tom Thibodeau and Minnesota know that. Unfortunately, best way they can get the leverage back is the best way they can also save the season. That's win basketball games starting tomorrow night in Brooklyn. So until then, this is where we will leave off. If you want more content before the next show, I mentioned Hunter on Twitter at HunterAtkins35. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose or the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. I've also got an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com. Always you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being, don't hesitate to reach out because I would love to help you. Also, if you're not subscribing to the show already, that's how you can get episodes right when they come out without even having to wait for me to post it on Twitter, then by all means, subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, Megaphone, so on and so forth. Or if you listen to your podcast, the odds are we're on there because we're part of a great network of shows at the Lockdown Podcast Network, local experts across not just the NBA, but the NFL, Major League Baseball, even college sports. That includes the Houston Texans and Texas A&M Aggies in the greater Houston area. So you can find Lockdown Rockets or any of those other shows at those platforms. Subscribe. That's how you'll get shows right when they come out. It'll go right into your feed. And that's also how we can look attractive to potential advertisers with our customer base, and that's how we can keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Anyway, this will do it for Thursday, November 1st. As always, thanks for listening, and come back this weekend, and we have more games to discuss. Rockets 1-5, but 4 of the 6 losses have occurred at home. We'll have an opportunity against some weaker teams, finally. One thing that's understated, the Rockets have played a relatively tough schedule to open the year, all against Western Conference playoff, I would say at least contending teams. We'll see who all makes it. But they played 6 straight games against playoff-worthy competition. They do get a bit of a break on this road trip out east. Brooklyn and Chicago back-to-back Friday and Saturday nights. Also away from Toyota Center, where I do think they might be in each other's heads a little bit. So hopefully the Rockets can get right. It looks like James Ennis will be back Friday night, perhaps James Harden on Saturday night. So hopefully we'll have some more positive recaps in our near future. But whatever the case, we'll be breaking it down Friday night and Saturday night right here at Locked On Rockets and on Twitter. But of course, as far as us here at the podcast, we'll have our normal recap shows this weekend right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. As always, thanks for listening. Enjoy your Thursday and come back soon.